It's all good. All right. Yeah, there's not it's not a whole lot to talk about tonight.
We lost.
Anyway,
we should win. Let's go.
Yeah. And good night. Thank you very much. Hey, welcome to the Killer Frogs, the podcast all about TCU athletics from the fans' point of view. My name is Sean Fouché, and this is episode 215 for Friday, November 8th of 2024. And on this week's podcast, we got Nathan Hernandez. How you doing, Nathan?
I'm doing just great for being a Frog and Cowboy fan.
I'm going to start introducing you as co-host Nathan Hernandez. How about that?
We'll see.
We'll get you there. We'll get you there. We also have Jordy Sandy. How you doing, Jordy?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Enjoying this colder weather. It's been nice. Been a bit of a brutal summer for me. So
yeah, we were talking earlier. I mean, you've been from Australia. Obviously, it's a pretty big continent. So, you know, what are winters like in Melbourne for you?
They're pretty mild, honestly. Like somewhat similar to here, except for the fact that it doesn't snow in my hometown. So it snows about an hour away though. So we have like ski resorts and stuff, which I feel like a lot of people think that it doesn't snow in Australia. It gets cold, but I mean, you're probably looking at maybe a couple of days in the low 40s, and then it's, you know, back to like a 50 degree deal. So it's not too bad.
That's not bad at all. That was pretty good. Well, talk about things that are not so bad. Let's talk women's soccer. Defeating BYU 2-1 and heading on to the finals against Kansas this Saturday at 7 o'clock. Of course, you can catch that game if if you don't, for some reason, want to watch the football game, you can watch it on ESPN Plus. So that'll be a really good one. Really, congratulations to the women's soccer team. They are on a tear this season. So that's going to be a really good matchup. But, of course, with the good comes with the bad. And let's talk about this Baylor game. I know Nathan would rather us just skip it, but we're going to have to just tear this Band-Aid off and talk about this game. Baylor ends up coming back winning on a last-second field goal against TCU. And, boy, this was one of those games, again, like the Florida game, this was something that could have been easily won by the Frogs had we had some defense. So, Nathan, what did you think about the game?
I mean, I actually really wasn't that upset after the game. I'm
shocked.
I would have been more upset if this was like 4 or 5 weeks ago and there was still a possibility of us performing well in the Big 12.
Okay.
With where we're at, I was kind of just like, well, we're average.
This is what we have.
This is what it is. You know, first time Baylor's beat us in regulation in 10 years, so throw them a bone, you know.
8-2 over the last decade.
Yeah, with one of those being a triple overtime win or whatever, how many ever overtimes it was.
Max was in.
Yeah, Max was in too, so we should have won that
right,
one.
Right, yeah. Oh, definitely.
I shattered my phone that day on accident. I was wearing boots and it fell out of my pocket as we were celebrating one of the touchdowns, and I just landed on the phone. And we were actually in Coach P's suite for that game. That game where I had to go down. A bunch of my teammates had gathered in that suite and watched it from there, still updated Twitter. But, yeah, so first time they beat us in 10 years in regulation, and ironically ended the exact same way as the team they were celebrating in 2014.
Yeah, well, for the most part, yeah.
That they mentioned 10 times.
I don't know. I mean, the 61-58 game was probably a little bit more
It was more dramatic, more intense, more at stake, but walk-off field goal.
Better football played in that game.
It depends on how you look at it. Yeah, if you blow a 21-point lead, it's not really good.
Well, I mean, either way. I mean, the TCU blew the lead and ended up losing. But I think that 2014 team was – and that 2014 Baylor team was a lot better than the team that took the field on Saturday. Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Top 10 teams at that time.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Top 5 teams, to be really honest with you, at that point in time. It was a really good matchup. But you're right. In the end, TCU ends up losing this game. And – you know, before we get to some of the worst aspects of this game, Jordy, kicking looked a lot better.
Kicking, maybe not so much punting.
Not that
at the end of the game.
Kyle looked a lot better.
Yeah, Kyle was good. I think hopefully he can carry that confidence in the rest of the season. I know for a fact that on the punting side of things, that punt return is one of the better punt returners in the country. Game plan going in was to, you know, limit his opportunities with returns and stuff. And I thought Ethan did a good job until, you know, that punt in the last quarter when we really needed him to pin him deep. But like you said, Kai was fantastic. And I think we knew going into the game it was almost a coin flip sort of a game. And I think throughout the game it was close like the whole way. And it just felt like whoever had the ball last was going to win the game. And, yeah, they were just able to make a play or make enough plays down the stretch and win the game.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. It was definitely a coin toss of a game. But, again, a game, though, that could have been easily won. And the defense, again, cannot seem to stop the run down the stretch. And this is an ongoing issue with this team, and it is going to continue to be an ongoing issue. And something, and we'll talk about Oklahoma State coming in here in just a little bit, but that is definitely a team that has a good running back that can hurt you. And when this defense is constantly having a problem stopping the run, I don't know what we can expect out of these last three games. But how did you guys feel about the offensive side of the ball against Baylor?
I mean, we took care of the ball, which that was what I was worried about last week.
Yeah, I think everyone was trying to figure out how many turnovers Hoover would have in this game.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, the last couple of weeks, I know we've had a lot of turnovers before this Baylor game, but I think a couple of them were unlucky, you know, tipped at the line and, you know, tipped off hands, like DB tips it off to the safety who catches it. And, yeah, I thought Josh played really well. I think it was the Big 12 quarterback of the week or in the, I don't know, whatever, the team of the week. You know, obviously that big drop by Savion.
That was a huge drop.
That was
That's at a point in the game, right? You can't drop that ball.
That was such a crucial moment in the game. I think that you know, and you score on big touchdowns like that, it's so good for the team. It's, you know, the momentum is so big in college football, and I think you catch that, and who knows, maybe the result might have been different.
Yeah, maybe we're talking about a bowl eligible TCU today at that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that is unfortunate. Nathan, how about you? What did you think about the offense?
It was good. Obviously, you know, you have a top 10 catch of the week or from Bailey.
That catch was phenomenal.
Honestly, a no turnover game is all you can ask for, really, out of an offense. That's usually the biggest, and that's, again, why we were in the game in the first place. But, again, yeah, like Jordy said, can't drop that because it's all but a go-ahead, like a touchdown. Like, unless he stumbles somewhere, like – there's no one near him.
There's no one close to him.
No one's catching him. He's going in the end zone. And that's, I think, kind of been something that's plagued us in the last, honestly, probably 6-7 years. It's just, not that Savion's a bad receiver. I think he's going to get drafted, all that stuff. But we just haven't really had a sure-handed receiver in a while. Since, honestly, Josh Doxson and John Diarz, the two guys that I never really saw drop a ball that they shouldn't have dropped. I feel like at some point in our seasons or games, we just kind of managed to drop a ball that we really need to make and to catch. And like Jordy said, it takes momentum out of the game. We have to punt, bad punt, they score, and momentum's completely on their side now at that point. And so if you score, you know, you have a long touchdown. Defense has energy. Defense has life, and maybe stops the run a little bit better. But yeah, something that couldn't have happened, it did happen, and that's just been TCU's Achilles heel this season, at least.
Yeah, I know you're right, and that is definitely one of the key moments of the game. But you know, we've seen this, like you mentioned, we've seen this time and time again throughout the season, right? JP Richardson in several different games drops passes. Besh, who is a sure-handed receiver, for some reason drops passes in key third down situations. It's for whatever reason this has been plaguing this team, not just this year but also all of last year as well. And given Josh Hoover's stats, it's amazing how many drop balls we see from this receiver core. It's a very talented receiving core. Just for some weird reason, we just can't seem to make the catches. You know, from a standpoint of having a complete game. And that seems to be the MO, not just of the offense, but it seems to be the MO of this entire team. We have yet to put together four straight quarters of football, probably since 2022, I would imagine, at this point in time.
Probably early 2022, too.
Right, yeah, because down the stretch, there were... Because,
yeah, we had to come back in a lot of those games.
Definitely had a lot of comebacks in 2022, yeah. And it's just, you got to, at one point in time, you kind of have to start to kind of question the coaching staff. The preparation that the coaching staff is doing with the team, and that's something that we'll definitely talk about here in just a minute. But where do you guys see this team coming off of this Baylor loss? How do you feel like this team's chances are going to be moving forward to get bowl eligible with three games left in the season?
I think, like you said, about bowl eligibility, that's the biggest goal, is just get another win. Hopefully they can come this week and, you know, got a chance to maybe pinch a couple more. I know we're a heavy favourite this week, but it's not going to be an easy game. And, you know, I think we'll take care of business, but, you know, it's really on the players and the coaches and, you know, how bad do we want to win?
Well, you were heavy favorites against Texas Tech, too.
And so, Houston.
And Houston, right.
And, kind of SMU, but...
Yeah, and we saw how those games kind of went. Yep. What do you think, Nathan? What do you think about this team's bowl eligibility at this point?
It's... Halloween is over, so I took off my optimistic costume. I think we have one good chance to get bowl eligible.
And that's this week?
Arizona.
No,
not this week?
Arizona.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Okay, well, then wait a minute. Let's not bury the lead. What bothers you about Oklahoma State? The run game?
Their run game.
That's what I figured.
This is the perfect game for them. Ollie Gordon is a beast. Mm-hmm. Even if their O-line isn't playing well, he's still Ollie Gordon. He's one of the best backs in the Big 12, and we are not good at stopping the run. And so I think that sets Oklahoma up for really big success.
I hope you're wrong, but I'm afraid you may be right. That's a big problem. And, of course, the team's going to come in and face Oklahoma State here at home. 6 o'clock kickoff. For some reason, apparently we're allergic to afternoon kickoffs this season. But we're going to do it without one of our consultants, as Dana has left for Nebraska for the Sea of Corn. So that'll be interesting. What do you guys make about that change?
For him, I think it's a good move. Because Matt,
no doubt.
Yeah, because Matt Rhule is really turning that program around. I think
even when Matt was at Baylor, we love Matt Rhule. I mean, he's a great coach.
I didn't, but I think that Nebraska will be playing for a Big Ten title in the next few years. Just they're doing well. They've got a young quarterback who has a lot of potential. As long as he can start taking care of the football better. I think that their offense is going to be set up for success, and then their defense is – Matt Rhule is usually good about getting a defense to play well.
Yes.
And so I think it's a good move for Dana, because I don't know what he's going to do. What did they say? He's potential OC or DC? Or
I think he has the opportunity maybe next year or moving forward.
Yeah, not at the moment. Like, he's not slipping into the OC.
Yeah, and so it's a good thing for him because he was obviously at Houston for a while. Well, he comes from the Tech family too, because he worked with Meacham and all them. We heard a lot of stories about him from Meach. But and then he was obviously at West Virginia for a while, and so to kind of step back to where he is now, a lot of people would see that as a step down, but I think it's kind of a rebranding for him, so I think it's good. For us... I don't know. I don't know how much he was doing behind the scenes. I know he was an analyst, but time will tell. Yeah.
And I think as an offensive analyst, I think he was pretty much tagged with defensive coordinator pretty much all season long. So, yeah, which I don't know how, like you said, I don't know how much he was able to help or not, but obviously he didn't help against the run, that's for sure. But I think that's more of a personnel issue than anything else. At this point, but that's going to be an interesting move for him. Something to definitely keep an eye out, especially for next season, see how Nebraska actually utilizes him and who leaves Nebraska. But that does bring me to another point about coaching. How do we feel about Sonny Dykes at this point in the season?
I'm a fan.
Ryan is a fan.
Ryan's a fan.
Rima's not.
Rima's not. The audience is split 50-50.
I mean... I think going into...
I don't know. That wasn't 50-50.
I think going into this season, you know, we kind of expected maybe that the ceiling was 8-4, 9-3.
I think I said 9 at one point in time, and I think most everybody was saying 8.
Yeah, I was definitely optimistic.
Well, that's true. You still have a chance for 8-3.
That's what I mean. We're probably going to go into, you know, start favorite this week, good chance of start favorite against Arizona, and then go up to Cincinnati and play. We still have a good chance, I would say, of going 8-4. And I think we get bowl eligible, and Sonny's fine. Like, I think there's definitely some changes that need to be made, but I don't think it's with the head coach.
Hmm. I don't know. I'm going. As the audience has interrupted, what type of changes do you think need to happen?
I don't really want to say too much because, I mean, I know a lot of these guys really well, so yeah, I don't want to speak my thoughts. I just think, I don't know if it's recruiting or, you know, developing talent, but there's definitely some areas where we could make some changes that I think would be in the best interest of the team. I'll just leave it at that.
That's fair enough. Nathan?
Yes, ma'am. From the audience.
And I did see some comments that were new this week. Now people are starting to call for the strength and conditioning, and it's all his fault. I want him to suit out and play. And he was
so.
So does Shannon, but I don't want... so only might get
the comment is about strength and conditioning, coach.
Yes, the question is, they're starting to call for his head, and these people look so weak.
Right.
And I've heard some of the former players say before, but I've heard that it is not on him. They are being worked hard, and they are disciplined, and that's ridiculous.
So... I'm not going to repeat that last comment, but the question is that, you know, the strength and conditioning coach, you know, he's currently being called out as possibly one of the issues with this team moving forward, but the team does look physically fit, and the team themselves feel like that isn't the problem. I'm trying to be good here.
Yeah,
my only concern with that is that sometimes you become very narrowly focused on what's going on. Like, your perception is just what is in front of you. So, you know, as a bunch of guys, you know, working out in the locker room and you guys are doing reps and you're working out, you're working hard and everything seems to be going well, from that perspective within that bubble, everything looks like you're doing everything right, okay? But when you start getting some outside perspective as far as what other programs are doing and what other things are happening with the other programs, you start to realize there may be some things lacking with that particular program. Do you think that's happening here?
I think the issue is that whenever you have an opinion about something, it's hard to be objective, and it's hard to come from it from an outside perspective. So whether it's from a fan's perspective, certain players, coaching staff, chancellor, whoever, everybody has made up their mind about what their problem with something is. Mm-hmm. Like Kendall Briles. A lot of people do not like Kendall Briles strictly because of what happened in the past with Baylor and their whole family history.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think it's hard, no matter how successful our offense is, as soon as something goes wrong, they're going to immediately blame Kendall Briles. And I'm not saying that they're wrong. I'm not saying anything else is wrong. But it's hard for people to view it as maybe it is a little bit of the defense, maybe it is a bit of offense. I think it is a little bit of everything. It's a melting pot. It's a team atmosphere. And so we've obviously seen games where our offense has done terribly and our defense has played well, like Utah. Mm-hmm. Our games where our offense has played really well, but our defense has not been playing well.
Correct.
It's because we've had so many of those games where it's one or the other, I don't think that it's one specific thing. I would love to see some change. I'm not going to say who because I don't know who. but you run into the issue of if we, you know, go 8-4, 9-3, not anymore, but 8-4, and get to a bowl game, like you said, Sonny Dykes is fine. You don't make changes in those situations because there's potential. You know, you had a successful season, as some would see as successful, because you made a bowl game or you won eight games, most of your games. But those are the most dangerous years because you don't make any changes because you're trying to improve on what you did.
That's
what the Cowboys have done for 15, 20 years.
Well, yeah.
We've been middle of the pack.
You make the playoffs, you lose the playoffs.
You don't. Yeah, we haven't had a really, really bad season. We went 4-8. We brought in two OCs to be co-offensive coordinators. We made a lot of changes on the offensive side of the ball. We went and won a Big 12 the next year. We had a lot of talent already, and to Jordy's point, like recruiting-wise, we were at the top of the list in the Big 12 in recruiting.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention.
Yeah, I don't think it's a recruiting issue. I do think it is a development issue. Where the development issue is,
I was going to say, wait a minute. Now you're starting to get into the specifics. Okay.
Peel layers back.
Yeah, slowly.
I was just going to mention the recruiting. I think next year we've got the number one recruiting class in the Big 12.
Yeah, at the moment we do, yeah.
And it's in the top 25 in the country, but, you know, it's got to be the development of talent.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, right? I hate to call this team a paper tiger, but, I mean, on paper, this team has the talent to be a whole lot better than 5-4 at this point in the season, right?
And they've showed the glimpses of it. Our defense has shown that they can play well when they need to.
They can. But then the question becomes, why aren't they consistent? Where is that running into a problem? Why do we seem to kind of fade off into the sunset late in the games? And especially with fans that have kind of seen what Gary Patterson was able to put together and a lot of the training and conditioning that his teams had going into those games and seeing how much they fought all the way through for four full quarters, to see the stark contrast between those teams versus these teams, I think, is one of the reasons why a lot of people are calling out strength and conditioning at this point.
That's fair. And to go to the Coach P point of things is, and you can talk to any Coach P player, there was a certain mentality that you had to have as a player on that, whether you play defense or not. You just
and those may be long gone at this point.
Yes.
Those days, with the modern landscape of college football, that may not even be possible.
Yeah, and so you kind of tend to forget those things, especially when that coach is now gone. You don't have anybody to instill that same mentality. You right. can have, like, a lot of, at the beginning of the year, we had a lot of old players come in, talk to the team. That's great. They can only do so much with that. Like, they obviously have to make a mental switch of saying, hey, I'm going to actually go be like that and have that mentality of I'm going to fight them until hell freezes over, and then I'm going to fight them on the ice. It's written in the tunnel on the way down the locker room, but if you don't pay attention to it, you're never going to have that mentality. And so I think Coach P obviously did a really good job of instilling that in his players and recruiting people that thought that way. That's why he went after the 2 and 3 stars and not so much the 4 and 5 stars. As you get those higher recruiting ranks, you get more prima donnas and divas and all that. Not ripping our players right now, but you tend to have those players come in that don't have that same mentality of they have a chip on their shoulder. Yes, Ryan.
So a few weeks back when we had Kale on and Song and y'all two here, I know one thing that was mentioned was if you don't want to play for TCU, then don't be here. Like, go somewhere else where you really want to play. You got to be passionate about playing for TCU. With the transfer portal, isn't that kind of part of it? I mean, like, we can sit there and say that Patterson got these guys ready and you really believed in it, kind of how we do the freshmen coming in, they're going to spend the next 4 years of their life at TCU. We just don't have the opportunity anymore. And I don't understand really what coaches are going to, how coaches get them passionate about playing for TCU when they're not passionate.
Yeah, so I think we were kind of talking about this before the podcast of the changing of the old guard. With coaches.
Well, yeah, so like one of the reports that came out today was, hey, Jimbo Fisher's on the market. Why doesn't TCU or Baylor go after him? And it's like, my point was, no. Like, not only no, but hell no. Like, for many reasons outside of the fact that it's Jimbo Fisher, but the fact is that I don't think that we need to be going after the old, you know, the old lions of college football coaching. To replace
people.
if Sonny doesn't work out and we have to replace Sonny, I don't think we need to be going after somebody like Jimbo Fisher.
No, I think we need to go after younger coaches who are, and this is the reason why Saban retired.
Yes.
The landscape of college football has changed, and so the way you used to coach things has completely changed.
And I think this is also a reason why Patterson isn't back in the game.
Yes. And so I want to go get younger coaches that are growing up in this environment of players are transferring, especially even high school and level. Yeah. Like players are transferring, moving, all that stuff. So you need people who have experience with getting a team to buy into a culture almost immediately, because those cultures with the transfer portal and all that stuff are not lasting as long as they are going to.
So the question is, how do you build a team when the culture seems to be rather self-indulgent?
I think culture is a product of the coaching, so that's where coaching changes have to come in.
I think, we just brought up Jimbo Fisher. I think a good example is Mike Elko, who's gone to Texas A&M with the same roster, and I've seen some of his videos and stuff that they've posted, on social media, and you can just tell that players love to play for him, and I think that's where the culture comes from. It's coaching, and it works its way down, and you can see those guys. I know they lost this past weekend, but they just look like a totally different team to the team they've been the last couple of years with essentially the same players. He's found a way to drive a culture there of guys who want to play for him and play for the school, and I think it comes from the top down, and whether guys want to play for you or not, that's something you've got to figure out and get in guys who do want to, compete and play. And, I think that's such a good example. And
Do you have an example of a young coach right now who's successful with it,
Nathan? Do you have an example of a young coach who's successful?
I don't know if I would consider Matt Rhule young, but Matt Rhule is the one. I would say not newer coach, but he's shown a product of, hey, he's a good quality person. That's why a lot of people liked him at Baylor.
I said that we liked him at Baylor, I didn't like Baylor.
I liked him
as a head coach.
But he's a good person. Yes. And when you have a good person at head coach, and not the coaches that are starting to die out, they're getting in your face, they're grilling you. It works and it's effective, but you're leading by fear instead of love. If you can.
The audience liked that one.
Yeah. But if you can lead by example and show, hey, I care about you as a player, that player is going to buy in now.
Right. But it only lasts so long because when you're not able to produce results on the field, right? I mean, that becomes a big issue because you have to pair that culture with winning.
Yes.
Right? I mean, obviously, winning solves a lot of problems, right? Happens all the time, but you've got to pair it with results on the field.
I think a prime example of that is Gundy at Oklahoma State. I think, he's kind of old school, probably a little bit like Patterson, and I think when you start losing, it's very hard to sell that to players because it's like, well, I'm just going to transfer, especially now, I'm just going to transfer.
Especially if you're playing in a place like Stillwater, Oklahoma.
Yeah, that sucks.
It's so funny. We were driving up to Kansas City, me and Patrick, and we're going through Oklahoma, and it's just nothing. And I'm like, it's crazy that just like right out there, there's a college. There's just a bunch of people living in the middle of nowhere. Like, because there's nothing out there. Like,
that was always strange to me when I first came here from Australia. It was like, so Australia, everyone lives around the coast, and that's where all the big cities and stuff are. And then
it's because you guys have scary monsters in the center of your continent.
No, their monsters are everywhere.
Yeah, okay? Hey,
oh, that's true.
Hey, I saw I was walking on the Trinity yesterday. And I saw a massive snake like swimming through the water. It wasn't a water moccasin. I don't even know what it was. But I'm telling you, I've seen more snakes here in Texas than I've seen in Australia. No, I'm not joking.
But what about spiders?
Yeah, I saw a lot of spiders.
Okay,
they're kind of cool though.
Yeah, they're the size of your face. Yeah,
but you don't really see any of the big ones. Like,
have you ever seen Alien? Anyway, I digress. So,
I think we got off track a little.
Yeah, we got just a little.
I can keep going because they have the deadliest spider in the world, the Australian funnel web.
Yeah, that's the thing. You've got to worry more about the smaller spiders than you do the big ones.
Well, the size of my phone, probably.
No, funnel webs aren't that big.
I'm sorry. The size of your phone is a big spider. I'm including the stretch of their legs.
The length of their legs would probably stretch. And they get in your shoe.
Are we being technical about? Okay, yeah.
This is all going to get cut out. I'm so sorry
I even brought up spiders at this point. That is. Yeah. And now Jordy is showing everybody photos. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm going to sleep well tonight. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's like a tree at your
That is crazy.
And then they perch up and then they show their fangs to you. Yeah.
Yeah, but you got to worry more about the smaller ones because one, you can't see them, and two, they're like, if you get bitten, they're deadly. Like,
yeah, black widows aren't big, and they're one of the deadly.
Oh yeah, but
anyways.
Okay, so where were we talking about spiders? Oklahoma, out in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's but yes, like you said, you have to put a product on the field that does win.
Right.
If you have a good coach and a quality coach, and he's, you know, shaping young minds and being a good leader, but ultimately they're not winning, that's what he's getting paid to do. He is getting paid to win.
Well, TCU has got the complete package, right? You have an unbelievable location. You have amazing facilities. You've got a fan base that is behind you. You've got donors that are ready to spend money. Given the way, and people are always arguing about the fan base, given how this team has played, we have had fans come out. I mean, I don't know if you saw Miami lately. Like, nobody is showing up in Miami's ranked, you know? It's like,
That's horrible.
That is terrible.
They're doing so well. They're going to be in the playoffs.
Right. To be fair, they do have to fill an NFL stadium.
Well,
that's hard to do.
There is
true,
no one, though.
But they're still not filling up enough seats.
I watched parts of their last game, and there is, like, there's nobody, like, in the front row. Like, it's horrible.
Yeah, it's empty.
They need a stadium closer to campus.
Yeah.
That would be nice, but it's not going to happen anytime soon. But my point is that TCU has a lot of things going for it, and when you combine, you know, a coach with that mentality, you have the location. You know, at this point, there's like, what excuses do you actually have to not put a good product out on the field at this point, right? At least a consistent product. You know, it'd be one thing if this team was consistent for four quarters and every single game and we're still at 5-4, right? Then we could start pointing to things like, okay, well, maybe we've got some deficits in certain key talent areas. But when you can't put together four straight quarters, what was that?
I was going to say offensive line, but...
Well, offensive line, I think we've known offensive line. But, I mean, even again, on paper, this offensive line should be a lot better at run blocking than they are right now. And so then the question becomes, why aren't they? And it's not like, my point is this, is that when you're Gundy and you're recruiting people to Stillwater, Oklahoma, in Boone Stadium, Boone Pickens Stadium, I mean, you know, you've got to be a very charismatic guy that has a lot of winning potential, right? You have seasons like this with Oklahoma State, that can decimate your recruiting for years. TCU doesn't have that same kind of issue. Not with location, not with facilities, right? Not with fan base, certainly not with co-eds. And so you have a situation now where it's like, okay, well, where's the problem? The problem's got to be somewhere in that coaching staff.
That's the question.
I know. That's what I'm trying to get you to answer. Nobody wants to answer the question.
Nope.
Today, but that's fine. So let's go ahead and let's. I think we've done good tonight. We've talked about spiders. We've talked about the weather in Australia, and we've talked about Baylor.
I got one more thing. Did y'all see what?
Is that about a spider?
No. Did y'all see what Gundy was saying during the week about the Oklahoma State fans?
No. What was he saying?
He basically said, I didn't actually hear the interview. I just heard people talking about it. He was basically saying all the people who are, like, talking bad about the program are never going to amount to anything, and they're not going to be able
to... That'll help.
They're not going to be able to afford, you know, anything, like, in the future and stuff. And then I saw Oklahoma State, their Twitter page, posted, like a little hype video, and everybody, all the Oklahoma State fans are commenting on it, saying, oh, sorry, can't afford to come to the game this week. And it was actually quite funny. But wow. I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know why you think it's.
Oh. Yeah, yes. I don't see him lasting much longer.
No, I think it's really starting to.
Well, he's a grown man.
Well, they were talking about how is he like legitimately trying to get himself fired, like coming for the fans like that when they're...
He's always kind of been that coach, though, of just... He's just going to say whatever. Like, even with the Ollie Gordon situation, he's like, I'm going to run him 50 times a game just to make him learn his lesson.
He's very outspoken.
Yeah, And he's a dude bro. He just doesn't care.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
That's the best description yet. Yeah, it is. It's going to be interesting to see, obviously, what sort of team we're going to have coming to Fort Worth and face the Frogs on Saturday. You know, hopefully, Nathan, it's going to be interesting hearing your prediction in just a minute. But, I mean, hopefully this team can figure out a way to stop the run game enough on Saturday that we can pull out a win and get bowl eligible at home in front of this crowd, I think that would be nice. But let's talk about predictions. So, Jordy, let's start with you. What do you think the final score is going to be on Saturday?
Well, I think we're going to have to be able to put up a lot of points because, like Nathan said earlier, I think Ollie Gordon, he's in serious danger of going off against us. We might play him into some form.
Right.
I think it's going to be a shootout. I'm going to go TCU 41, Oklahoma State 35.
All right, 41-35. What about you, Nathan? You think it's going to be a shootout?
30-28 TCU.
Okay, so you are actually thinking we're going to win.
I didn't switch. I never said we were going to lose. I didn't, and I obviously am never going to predict that we lose.
You just weren't optimistic.
Just think that this is not a good game for us.
Okay, so.
But I still, there's always hope. Like, you know, there's always a little bit of.
A little. There's always a little.
A little bit. And that's what hurts. That's the hope that hurts.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, Vegas likes our chances.
Well, there you go.
Well, that's true. If you go by the betting markets, TCU's definitely going to
be 11,
carrying away.
10.5, 11.
Yeah, I think the line started somewhere around 13 and then kind of dipped around to about 9.5, and now it's back up to about 10.5, 11.
I'm
going to
take about 10 points off both of those. No.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting game. I do agree with Jordy a bit. I think this is going to be a bit of a shootout. I think this has a chance, actually, to be a lot more than just 41-35. So I'm going to go 48-37 TCU. So I'm agreeing with the betting markets. I think it's going to be about an 11-point win by the Frogs. But I think the Frogs get close to the half-century mark there with 48 points. So I think that's going to be a good game for us. But the key is going to be turnovers in this game. Because I think with a shootout like that, you have an opportunity for Josh to kind of get a little loose with the ball, especially if he gets kind of comfortable and he's slinging it around. He may actually try to do a little bit too much when he doesn't need to.
Even with mine, Ollie Gordon still scores 4 touchdowns. Like, so he still goes off against us.
We just have
to do enough offensively.
Yeah, it's basically Ollie Gordon versus TCU on Saturday.
Jack Bish.
Yes, that's going to be a lot of fun to see. So. Well, with that, I think we have come to the end of the podcast. Like I said, I think we've covered pretty much everything tonight. Hope everybody sleeps well tonight thinking about the funnel spider. Is that what you call the funnel?
Funnel web?
Australian funnel web spider.
Australian funnel web.
I guess you don't have to
look
say
it
Australian
up on Wikipedia later on. Yeah, or
we're not going to repeat
the
that.
The audience is going to go home and drink and dream about six packs, apparently. So. And it's not the six-pack that
from
most
the
of you are thinking about
from the local
at home.
Brewery.
But, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Anyway, so definitely catch the game, 6 o'clock, TCU. Get there early. It's going to be a beautiful day as far as weather goes, as long as the rain kind of stays out of the forecast. And right now it is. Should be in the 70s, if not upper 60s, by the time kickoff actually hits. It's going to be absolutely beautiful day for football. So with that, we've come to the end of the podcast. I want to thank everybody out there listening to us. Of course, you can find the Killer Frogs podcast on all the major channels. You got Amazon, Spotify, Apple, and Google Play. And, of course, you can go to killerfrogs.com and sign up for your own free account and let us know what you think. What is the worst spider in the world? Is it the Australian funnel web spider, or do you just, you know, don't like spiders at all? I don't like the ones that are like the size of a trash can, I'm just going to say right now. And with that, thank you all very much. We've come to the end of the podcast. It's the time we get our frogs up when we get to say,
Go Frogs!